Welcome, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. So we convene at the dark of the moon, when traditionally elders would gather to determine the course of culture, and so do we, that we may, we humans may find a kind of global kinship with all cultures and all creatures. The new moon, which will be at 8:14 a.m. on Saturday morning Pacific time, its image is metamorphosis complete. A butterfly of collective culture emerges from dormancy, expanding to protect life. And we go, oh, that, and not a moment too soon either. And the very next degree of the zodiac that it will arrive at that morning, its image is strange white flowers bloom in the midnight gardens of Babylon. And Babylon, of course, is Baghdad, is the Middle East. And we certainly extend our sense of kinship to the beautiful, complex, and ancient culture of the Middle East, of Iran, of Baghdad, one of the most fantastic cities in the world, kinned really to New Orleans, these cities of syncretism that have such magic that have been so broken. And we extend our kinship out. We remember from midwinter, you know, several weeks past, is traditionally when Persephone lit her candle and began her ascent up from exile, up from the underworld, and we with her. And we say, well, it is this new moon that we're approaching this Saturday when she and we are back. We are back, we are emerged, and we dedicate all of our theatrical creativity to, to contribute our gifts at this extraordinary time. When Persephone comes back from the underworld, and again, it's a part of us, she has earned gifts that she carries, both known and unknown, that are the specific and crucial medicine for the culture at the time. And we go, okay, that is this part of the mythic news that we're going to animate. And we remember from Brazilian culture the word jatino. Jatino means the powerful magic that comes in dangerous times. And we go, yes, indeed. I don't know how many of you saw the alleged president's alleged press conference, everything's in quotes, but we go, oh man, it was like the end of a Law and Order episode where the sociopathic, you know, Dauphin unravels completely, and many people there were like, ooh, ooh. And then there were the go-along press who kind of laughed in submissiveness at the scary banter. The line that he blew some time ago, too, you know, fool me once, fool me twice, won't get fooled again. Well, we say no fooling us twice, Mr. Alleged President, because we are friends of your soul, we're enemies of your project. So it is time for this sociopathic Dauphin and those who hold his strings to really be just like in Law and Order. It's time to cuff him and lead him backstage for his own good. So, more than perfectly, listening to listeners as I do, we had an email from a listener in New Mexico saying, oh, Caroline, wouldn't you please have Jane Fonda on the air? I think of her now as the anti-Hillary and a woman who definitely has something to say and is, again, not only about our current foreign policy, but where we might go from here. She's a visionary and a credible leader, has risked a lot by walking her talk. She's been down on the Mexican border protesting the atrocity of disappeared, murdered, mutilated young female workers in the maquiladoras. And I, for one, says this listener, would like to encourage her to run for national office and join a collaborative praise fest for her extremely creative and courageous anti-war activity during the Vietnam era. We need Jane Fonda now. So I got to write back to her and say, your wish is our command, because that is who we are about to bring on, too. And then just before I bring you in, you wonderful being, then a friend of mine right after that said, called up right after the peace rally here in Washington, said, at his AA meeting, he said, somebody said, do you know who was there? Do you know who was there? Anybody said, no. And they said, Jane Fonda was there. And the whole AA meeting burst into applause, going, oh, we got it now. We got him on the ropes now. This is such a good sign. And then a friend of mine also just wrote in, you know, and said, oh, please, you know, convey to Jane Fonda the joy it brings that she is back as an anti-war warrior. I can still remember the awe I felt at her bravery in going to Vietnam and exposing the bombing in the north. My father was serving in Vietnam at the time, so it was very personal, and I was so grateful to her then. It's so good that she's back. So, welcome back, Jane Fonda.
Wow, that's thank all those people that wrote such beautiful things.
Yeah, well,
Carolyn,
you are yourself, but also you carry with you your story, and again, to be able to be welcomed back and to say, oh, you know, I mean, not that you haven't been busy forever, but in this public way of reassuming your earned authority and going, ah, everybody's got to speak out. So, yeah.
Well, I've been involved all along, kind of under the radar.
For right.
Reasons that I actually said at the rally. I didn't want to, harm the movement because of the way the Swift voting takes place, you know. But I felt that it was a good time for me to speak out. I was extremely moved. You were there too, and I don't know how old you are, so I don't know if you remember a bunch of the Vietnam
demonstrations. I do.
It took about 7-8 years into the Vietnam War for there to be a palpable presence of Vietnam veterans and active duty servicemen. It did happen, though, but now they were all over that demonstration. This is 3.5 years into the war, and the military families, the Gold Star mothers, active duty servicemen and women, veterans, were so palpably present at that demonstration, and it's very, very important, and so important for all of us to understand the bravery that it takes and the political decisiveness of that stance. You know, it's hard for the alleged president to say that we're traitors when we're standing alongside people who have risked their lives and sacrificed their sons and daughters.
And I don't know if backstage you met Lieutenant Watata's parents.
I know his parents, yes.
Ah, yes, so
yes,
wonderful. And yeah. And our friend Colonel Ann Wright spoke at his trial and said, Lieutenant Watata is taking care of his soul and the soul of his country by doing no further damage and by this act of bravery. And we go, yes, I think it is this, certainly as you emerge, this time of extending this invitation, because it's so crazy now with Bush using the same language about Iran. And we go, oh, the Congress, we really must hold them and tell them what to do, which is not fooled twice, no.
Yeah. And, you know, I was so glad what you were saying in your opening, reminding people of the ancientness and the richness and sacredness of those places, Iraq and Iran. I mean, you know, that we are harming people there and bombing there and destroying the shrines and the relics and the people is just, it's beyond thinkable. It's unthinkable.
And I think what we say is, you know, where there is Mars, this brutal, greedy cruelty, then let there be Venus, kinship and art and beauty and appreciation
right.
of depth
well,
of culture.
Well, that's where women come into it.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah. That's where, you know, I said a couple of years ago, I wrote a book called My Life So Far, my memoirs, and I said at the end, I feel like that patriarchy is like a crust that's covered the earth for so long, but just like in Yellowstone where you see geysers bubbling up and mud bubbling up and you can see steam rising from the cracks and fissures in the earth's crust rising above the pine forests, I kind of feel like that's what's happening. I can sense and feel the female spirit, and that's not excluding men, because men carry it, some the men of conscience carry it too, but that it's beginning to coalesce and to rise up all over the world, not just here.
Absolutely.
And none too soon, as you say.
Right. No, I think this show and then everything is dedicated to woofy women, the likes of yourself, and the men who support them. And also really going way back in order to go forward, there was great dating advice given 2,500 years ago by Chiron to his young male heroes. And he said, a worthy woman who can redeem the culture is like a powerful sort of shape-shifting being, and the man's job is to neither attack nor flee as the more dangerous animals appear, you know, in her soul, but to completely support her. And we go, great dating advice from 2,500 years ago. We're willing to animate that thing.
I'm just reading the Gospel of Mary.
Yes.
And it's very moving, because in the Gospel of Mary, Mary is portrayed as the apostle that Jesus not only loved the most, but recognized in her the highest consciousness. He taught her when she saw him resurrected, he he taught her things that he hadn't taught the other apostles. And when she came back then and she told some of the other apostles what Jesus had told her, they scoffed at her and laughed at her and got angry and said, you know, who are you? And he would never have told a woman things that he wouldn't tell us. And there was a rabbi, Levi. He's not mentioned in the canonical Bible, but he was one of the apostles, and he stood next to her and stood up for her and defended her. And, you know, there's a lot of those guys around, and we got to cherish them.
Absolutely.
And help create a safe space for them, too, because it's not easy in this culture of ours for men to hold that space.
Yeah, and Democracy Now!, there was a wonderful woman that I'm going to track down, Middle Eastern woman here, whose father is an imam in West Virginia, and she's a single mom, and she decided she would sit on the men's side of the place of worship, and everybody was like, and she said she could hear her father down in the chaos yelling, feminism, equal women. The imam was yelling this, you know, completely. We go, we're in this dynamic experiment now, and I think much of, yes, excavating back to before, you know, like when you say the Gospel of Mary, yes, that, I love also that a Turkish novelist on this show said, you know, in pre-Islamic Ottoman Empire, the predominant deity throughout the Middle East was she-wolf. It was this alpha female wolf's, with a woman's body, you know, on a azure blue flag blazing throughout the Middle East. We go, let's find her. Let's go, you know, let's excavate and reanimate and bring up these artful forces of kinship and cooperation as opposed to the war gods. So, yes.
He told me once that millennia ago there was a society of where the women were the healers, and they used pranks and
yes.
songs and drama. What?
Yes.
What was that society called?
Well, I think it lives in our bones, but it was years ago, and I use this all the time. A woman handed me her academic paper on the traditional role of woman as trickster in all cultures. I mean, we're excavating back down here, the kinship, and it was great, and here's you. Because it said, the trickster woman, you know, even makes fun of the shaman who can get a little stuffy, or the priest, you know, and it's about democracy and equality, and it says she mocks the community because she loves what it should be, to hold it to that. And she defies authority with wit and elan to demonstrate to others that she's done it and survived. So I was thinking of that very much also with the likes of what we aspire to be, and certainly how you've lived. Going, I mean, we're all working on this forever, but you set out on that, you know, very early, going, I'm going to do these things. And yeah,
not always with enough pranksterism.
No, exactly. That's right. No, that's why we've gotten together here.
But yeah, that's right. With age comes pranks.
Well, I love a friend of mine who's very dedicated and effective, but he says if we're not having fun, we're just not serious enough.
Right.
And I think right now it's so crazy. I mean, it's so that if we're not polarizing strident, but if we're extending the invitation to all sane and reverent people, everyone, I mean, the Republicans right now are appalled. I mean, the demonstration of Bush's press conference, he'd never been more drugged or out of it or sociopathic or delusional. And I think many people are like, you know, even the hard, you know, and so to extend going enough, all sane, reverent people, real values of life, you know, and I think that's part of our evolving art form of now from 60s, which is important.
Yeah. From way before then, though. Right. I didn't see the press conference. What do you mean drugged? Or are you just kind of...
Well, no, I think he's on... I think he's on very strong meds, and I can sort of almost feel them adjusting the thing. But disoriented, lacking a focus, more of what we've seen, but even more so, and absolutely saying the same things about Iran, going, well, see, because we know we got intelligence for sure now that, and I'm going to do something. And it's like, no, you're not.
Why in those kind of situations, it was this way with Nixon at a certain point, do I just want to sort of put my arms around him and take him off in a corner and
yes,
give him lullabies?
That's good.
You know, I feel, God, I mean, it's so sad.
Well, it is. He's, and he is a deep, we have surrendered our leadership to somebody who is untreated, who has a condition that needs treating. And I do think it is emblematic. I mean, we're not exaggerating when we say sociopathy, because it's a lack of understanding of the effect of one's actions. There's no feeling, and there's a faux charm. And it is the deepest shadow, I think, of the American public. I remember that have a great guy on this show, Ed Tick, who works with returning Vietnam vets and now Iraqi vets. And one of the Vietnam vets said, "This country has a really uncaring and ugly shadow, and we, the vets, have been hired to carry it so everyone else can feel nice."
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I think we do have to acknowledge our complicity and withdraw, suck our complicity away from having inflicted this man and all that it represents about the shadow of the American character, and to extend, you know, really artful kinship and apologies to Iraq, to Iran, the people.
Where in your experience, what corners of our country are is the prankster paradigm being most closest to the surface and showing itself?
Well, I'd say that's what this show has been dedicated to for 10 years, and we have a rousing, "Everybody out there, wave your hands." Ah, everybody. We say it is the compassionate trickster, the wedding of imaginative ingenuity, you know, imagination and ingenuity, a sense of conscious kinship. So I'd say wherever I speak these things, people go, yes, yes. Yeah. You know, it's in all of us, but it hasn't been invited.
Yeah.
And I think that that's what we're up to right here, which is to invite, saying we need the playful, ingenious, imaginative, and certainly to break the fear, because we say, certainly for obvious reasons, you know, and you've been an early, you know, brave person in this, but, you know, for much of human history, for creative women or, you know, creative guys, safety has lain in being hidden. And right now the trickster says that has been true, but now safety lies in everyone coming out.
Yeah.
It's safer if everyone comes out. And we do have that luxury in this country. I mean, Russia would be harder.
Yeah. There's no question about it. Yeah, you at least we can live. You know, someone like me would have been killed someplace else.
I think so. I mean, again, and that's where we begin to value the soul of this country, which says, no, we will not let this experiment go down of real equality, and where woofy women can bloom into ever greater effectiveness and not be, you know, silenced early. Yeah, I mean, I think that's something we want to value about this country and go, that's a good thing, and that's what we want to extend to the world.
Yeah. And one of the... I don't know the demographic of your audience, but I always think it's important to tell young couples or single people who are having babies the importance of raising our sons differently.
Yeah.
You know, it's really hard. I have a 7.5-year-old grandson, and, you know, I can, from the time when he was still, you know, sleeping with me and saying, "I love you, Gamma," and hugging and kissing, and, you know, now he's afraid of showing emotions and he's kind of pulling away. You have to keep those young little boys connected to their hearts, and while all of society is pulling them in the other direction, you know, we just can't grow up any more men that are alienated from their hearts. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
But moms and dads have to do, especially moms, have to work real hard at that. We have to help our boys know how to cry and know how to identify sadness.
And yes, exactly. And this is where we then extend the, you know, into a much larger definition of politics to embrace all culture, the stories that circulate through mass mind and the games that are played. You know, indigenous people that I've talked to around the world say, games are the primary way we passed on our teachings to young people. And I go, we've completely let that go. Oh, my God. There was a great mythologist, I think it was Ursula Le Guin, who years ago said, where are the stories of ingenious little boys who, you know, with cleverness ally themselves with the forces of foxes and, you know, and the moon to overcome tyranny as opposed to, all cultures have had this. And that's, I think, you know, part of your unique contribution and all of us as we feel our unique contribution, which is to reclaim the theatrical realm of culture and stories so that they encourage, which is such a great word, so they feed the heart of that which is good. What do we want to encourage and cultivate, absolutely, in young boys and young people? And certainly we want to say we need you.
And we need you to not become emotionally illiterate. I mean, this culture tends to make our boys culturally illiterate.
Oh, yeah?
They'll pay for girls to remain literate, but not boys. And and sometimes it's the moms that do that. You know, I our president's mother, I think, has a tendency to make you do that. In some instances, the mother's more of a problem than the father. Although, you know, I'm not one that believes that if it's not one thing, it's a mother. We always blame things on mothers, but sometimes, you know, moms are kind of ventriloquists for the patriarchy, and they're the ones that do the damage.
Well, and it is all in cahoots. I remember years ago I asked a really great Jungian analyst, I said, what's phallic narcissism? And she said, it's where the couple is really not in good shape, and so the mother turns her little boy into a little man, a little confident, and so he grows up as kind of superficially charming, but with a deep resentment of women and life underneath the charm. And then he in turn marries somebody whom he can't fulfill, and then she turns her little boy into a phallic narcissist. And I go, God, the world is run by these people.
And she goes, I've married a few of those.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. Well, we do, you know, because they're charming on the surface.
Yes.
And we don't understand what hatred and resentment are underneath. And so, yeah, the personal is the collective. I mean, we're all working on, yeah, what's a good relationship? And what do we want to encourage? And what are we going to value? And, you know, in men and women. All those, absolutely. Things. But it was when she said that, I go, it's true that we break that spiral. So we also send that out to boys and mothers and to everybody, and your dog agrees.
Yeah, that's exactly why she barked.
Yeah.
Come on, stop.
Well, that's why, our alliance with dogs, and what you say, I think, is really crucial, and your 7.5-year-old grandson, and sometimes people send me their extremely troubled youth to consult with, and a kind of heartening thing is that the sad part, kids who are diagnosed as, you know, ADD and crazy and suicidal and bipolar, but they can read the Harry Potter books in a day, because even in its befoibled form, it is real nutrient, and it draws upon their magical wanting to contribute to the world and form alliances with dogs and everybody to save the world. They want to be heroes, you know, and the really depressed kids, you know, feeling way in there, I go, you're kinned with the crisis in the natural world and all that's dying, and they go, yes, yes, and you don't know that anyone else cares, and they go, yes, and I go, no, you're part of a team. They're like, oh, well, let
okay.
me get, then I won't kill myself, and I'll get a puppy. And we go, yes, you know, like that. So
you know what you said, the personal is political, and it's so true. If you know, we can't stop focusing on the world and on our society and on our community and just focus on ourselves. But the self, you have to work on that too, because when you've gotten to a playful state of consciousness, it radiates out and people, it's contagious. You know?
Yes.
And you know, that's what we have to create, is this, we have to turn what we're looking for into a contagious state, that everyone's going to want to be part of it. I want what he's got. I want what she's got. I want that sense of peace and centeredness and playfulness and you know, the Dalai Lama is an example. You know, that just life is, what you said to me one time, your life is going to be disappointment proof.
Yes, right. Well, how do we do that? That's right. We say expectation is the partner of disappointment. Uh-oh. But
yes,
willingness.
Blow.
But say what?
Aim low.
No, not aim low. No, that would be deeper disappointment. Here's what the trickster says. The teachings of trickster. Trickster says expectation is the partner of disappointment. It's a racket. Like no. Willingness is the dance partner of life. Going, I'm not expecting, but I'm completely willing.
Yeah, that's good. And
it's a small verbal distinction, but a completely different energetic dynamic. I mean, we can go to a party or an event or a peace march, you know, if we're expecting, like, oh, I'm going to meet, you know, but you go, I'm not expecting, but I'm willing, I'm present, I'm disappointment proof.
Yeah.
And I think, and also one of the things that I keep working with is that Humane Society had told me years ago that we humans have more in common with wolves socially, with your dog, for instance, than we do with apes, and that the criterion for leadership in wolf culture is not dominance, it's who initiates play best. That's their top criterion. And it's not just play, let's go hunting, let's do this, but play is at the top. And I go, that's a fantastic leadership criterion. Let's implement that everywhere.
I think it's true of bison, too. I spent 10 years in the middle of a lot of bison when I was married to Ted Turner, and I noticed two things. First of all, whenever they move, and they move just for the hell of it. I mean, they cavort.
Oh, I love cavorting.
And the leadership of the cavorting is always the alpha females.
Yes.
And when they move from one place to another, which they do just for the hell of it, it's always an alpha female in the lead. But cavorting is central.
I love that.
In fact, when they're first born, they come out of they drop and then they cavort.
We're going to learn from this. And thank you for giving bison a better name. I had no idea. We think of them as just sort of like, ugh.
I know.
Oh.
No, they're great. Ted and I used to go out and open the windows of the car in the evening and turn up soothing country western music, and they'd all lie down. You know, like 1,000 of them, which is sort of lie down.
and listen, you know, again, yeah. It's that kinship. It's Uncle Ramus that says, you know, there was times when all the creatures used to gather to sagashuate, just like there ain't been no falling out or hard times, and they remembered they were all kin. Yeah, I love those moments with humans and bison and wolves. And that's, I think, back to your grandson, that's, children are so, you know, like, this is what heroism is, to be tender and to be, you know, connected to animals and to have a heroic task, but we really want to redefine heroism.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the troops, I mean, our allies over there who are subjugated as troops, so many, especially when Katrina happened, they wanted to come home to heal New Orleans.
Yeah.
And that's the invitation. Come, we need your goodness and your ingenuity and your bravery to heal and to be appreciated, rather than, again, making these people sociopaths.
That's right, yeah. All these young people whose souls are being torn up and shredded.
And that's, I think, why the video games have got to change, because they are war preparation.
Yeah.
Price of mistakes is death.
Yeah.
To kill without feeling. And the army tracks those video games, and we go, no, we have to inhale stories, games, everything back and reinvent it.
Military tracks those?
Yeah, they do. They do. In fact, if you're particularly good, you get a little note when you're 14 saying, we've noticed that you're really good at killing people on this particular video game, and we'll be in touch, okay?
Are you kidding?
No, I'm not kidding. This was the last story that I can't remember his name at the moment, a journalist was working on right before he died last year. There is. There's a particular game that all these kids play all over the world that's a kill 'em game, and it's a military recruiting game.
Oh, God.
I know. So we have to inhale all this back, and fortunately, you're here, and you're back. And our guest today is
I never went away.
I know you didn't, and we'll explain.
I'm the Taliban. I never went away.
You are the positive, yes. We are positive sleeper cells here, awakening. And our guest today is Jane Fonda, and we're going to be right back after a very short break. You can join us with a reverent contribution or query for our guest, 510-848-4425, if you are very, very inadvertently patient. And also, this music at the break music is just one of my favorites. Just everybody visualize. This is the power of potent women coming back, and we can do it, and here it goes. Welcome back, allies. Welcome back, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. Website is visionaryactivism.com. Soon, website, and yes, the Compassionate Trickster Experimental Juju Mystery School may, inshallah, be launching next week. Our guest today is Jane Fonda, and also the Jane Fonda part of ourselves that is, never went away, as you said, Jane, but is back in an even more, well, how would you say it? I mean, you stepped out at the peace rally, and you never went away. You've been working on everything for a long time, but you're willing now to be more visible?
Yeah, I spent a couple of years traveling around the country with my book last year and the year before, and, you know, including, the, you know, the heartland like Kansas City. And what I heard and saw was that, you know, there's this America that desperately wants change and doesn't identify with what's going on, and many of them are devout Christians, but they don't like the, you know, how the far right has claimed their religion, and they want to be fierce, and they want to step out. And I thought, well, I'm just going to stand up there for them, and just remind them that you can stand up now.
Yes, and I always like to remember that where we get the word sacred from, it comes from Sakir, and in Greek communities there were signs outside the village that said, if you step outside this boundary, you are Sakir, you are on your own in defiance of conventionality. And that's where we get our word sacred from. To contribute to the group, you, in a sense, need to step outside the bounds of the group, and sometimes we step too far, or not perfectly, but still, you know, and I think of that as part of your journey, too. You go, I'm going past that Sakir sign to be sacred.
Right, but always with the awareness of those that are coming along behind and reaching back and bringing them along. That's the problem with stepping out too far, is that then you get severed from community.
Yes. Well, exactly, that spiral. You want to go out, and again, that's the woman trickster, which is that she steps out of love.
Yeah.
And as we've spoken before, you know, one of my favorite beings that you're a kind of incarnation of is Scheherazade, because the power of the woman redeemer, okay, the Venus redeemer, is for her eloquence and her stories. She not only saves all women and liberates the land, but she liberates even the tyrant from his own murdered heart. And that's when you were saying, I just want to take poor George Bush back. I want to put him in cuffs myself, but I bow to your better idea, which is, come here, we need to move you backstage. This is not good for you to get away with this stuff.
You can let it go.
That's right.
You'll be a man. You don't have to worry about premature evacuation. You can
yes.
You can do what's right as a Christian, and you don't have to worry about losing your manhood.
Yes, and you can recover from your mother, kind of like Angela Lansbury in The Manchurian Candidate. Yeah, which is actually a very pertinent movie. Yes, the scary mother. Anyway, well, let's go to our first ally caller, who is Joan in Sebastopol. Come in, Joan.
Hello, and thank you for this really great show. And it's really wonderful to hear both of you talking about such important subjects, and as well as the contribution of women to culture. And this is something that's been really on my mind a lot, because I'm teaching a course at the California Institute of Integral Studies. It's called Societies in Balance, or Cultures in Balance, Women at the Center. And the women at the center part is taken from a really great field work by anthropologist Peggy Reeves Sanday, who worked for 20 years with a society in West Sumatra that's called the Menangabau, who call themselves matriarchal, but it's not the 19th century idea of women ruling, but it is a kind of a redefinition of matriarchy in the sense of being a society in balance, being a society that is centered around women's rituals, but in which men take a very balanced participation with all of it, and everyone works for the sustainability of the society. And that's only one of really many societies that have not been recognized or recognized enough in human history in which sustainability and women's role in that sustainability is really what makes the society viable. So this is what my course is about, and I think that this is something that really needs to be looked at more and more so that we see that what we are trying to do in our society and really must do if we're going to survive, which is to rediscover sustainability and women's place in that, that we're not just making this up out of a vacuum, but that there is real historical roots to that.
And do you know about Rwanda? It was just one of our guests, Swanee Hunt, and her program on waging peace said, do you know which country right now has the most mandated women leaders in government?
Yes.
And everybody guessed, and it was like Rwanda, because out of that crucible of horrible disrespect for life and carnage, the women rose up grassroots and said, we as embodiments of reverence for life, minimum 50% in the legislature, and here we go. You know, and so absolutely, it is cooking away. Thank you, Joan.
Yes, and I'd like to recommend.
Go ahead.
Yes, Jane.
We have to remember the opposite of patriarchy isn't matriarchy; it's democracy.
Yeah,
exactly. It's
absolutely.
It's balance. But
yes,
there is a new definition of matriarchy, which is not women ruling, but it is more what Rion Eisler talks about as a partnership society.
Absolutely, we got that. Which is the whole model of cooperating with everything. That's right. That's not the polar thing. Absolutely, we are absolutely in cahoots. Let's go to our next caller, who is Paul in Livermore. Come in, Paul.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Paul.
I'm Barrett from San Mateo.
Okay.
Oh,
hi.
All right, Barrett from San Mateo.
Hi, how are you, Carolyn? Hi, Jane. Welcome. It was really funny. I was going to bring up Rion Eisler and also a book called The Great Cosmic Mother, which as a male, I really enjoy the book because it was like finally I got to read something about her story instead of his story, and it's so nice to have the counterbalance, and I love Rion Eisler's way of being able to present a very clear and vivid portrait of another voice that can help other men get that we are a partnership, that we are all equal. It's a beautiful thing, and I really enjoy your show, Caroline. I've called many times before, but it's been a while. And Jane, thank you so much for your work and your commitment and your love, you know?
Thank you, Derek. Can you mention specifically what book by Rion Eisler would be good to read?
The Chalice and the Blade, of course, and that one really was so stunning in such a compacted way. It's just unbelievable, and I recommend to many people having trouble with their children around high school age and stuff, if you could just sit and read some of what this woman, she's incredible, you know? But thank you so much. And
thank you, Derek.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right,
thank you, Barrett. And it's true, as we excavate backwards, when people say, well, the nature of humans is to be warlike, and we go, not if you go back 5,000 years, where, yes, Rion Eisler's work and many increasing emergent work now, you know, just outside Lima, Peru, was excavated a 5,000-year-old city with thousands of musical instruments, no weapons.
Yeah.
You know, in Malta, 5,000 years ago, incredibly complex and beautiful culture, no weapons, no defenses.
It has existed, so it can exist again.
It's in our bones, and we need that. Good. Now we go to Paul in Livermore. Come in, Paul in Livermore.
Hi, Caroline. I have two dogs, and boy, they've enriched my life. Hi, Jane. How are you doing?
Hi, Paul.
You were
good, thanks.
In 1971, in my dorm at Santa Cruz, you were the favorite...
Did I do anything bad?
No, you were the favorite poster.
Oh.
On the men's part of the dorm, and the fellow who got all those swimming medals...
That's good, Paul, but we're not in the Slow Talkers of America contest. Do you want to offer something to Jane to respond to?
Yeah.
Okay.
You just offered me a nice memory.
He did offer you a nice memory. It's good.
I appreciate it.
It's good, and thank you. And your dogs as well. Okay, let's go to Elaine in Santa Rosa. Come in, Elaine.
just love your show. Thank you so much. And Jane Fonda, you've been an inspiration. I was one of those women that was behind you 1,000,000% when we were protesting the Vietnam War. In fact, I had just gone back to college as a single parent. And I remember walking in a protest saying, thank God I don't have a son, I have a daughter. And now, some X amount of years later, I have a beautiful 18-year-old grandson. So, I mean, it just doesn't feel like it ever ends. But what I would like you to address, I do a program up here in Sonoma County called Women's Spaces, which is dedicated to ordinary women doing extraordinary things. And one of the things that I try to get the women that I interview on the TV show to talk about is where they get the courage. You know, what for myself during Vietnam, what happened was when I saw that young girl with the running with the napalm, I thought to myself, oh my God, that could be my daughter. And that gave me the courage to just step forward and say, the heck with it, I'm going to stand up for what I believe. I wrote a news article. I was a journalism major at the time about I was tired of the communists getting all the credit. I wanted it to go to free-thinking individuals. But it took a lot of courage to stand up. And oftentimes people think, especially women, they think only the ones in the forefront can do it. But someone like yourself, where do you pull your courage? Where do you get your deeper inspiration that says, you know, I'm just going to stand up? And especially during the Vietnam time when so many
I came very late to the anti-Vietnam War movement, and I've often wondered why it took me so long. And I think, you know, there's comfort in ignorance. You know, it's always easy to avoid knowing. But strangely enough, it was American soldiers, resistors, who were in Paris at the time and who sought me out and gave me a book called The Village of Ben Suk by Jonathan Schell. And you know, I read this book and it rocked me to my core, because I grew up thinking that if our soldiers were someplace, it was the side of the angels. My father was in the Second World War. And so for me, it was reading that book, two things, reading that book, which showed me that what we were doing in Vietnam was the opposite of what we were supposed to stand for as a country. And then right after that, it was just when Malcolm X's autobiography came out, and I read his autobiography, and what struck me the most about that was how this pimping, dope running, you know, sexist guy, Malcolm Little, became a nonviolent Muslim teacher. And I thought, wow, one human being can change that much. Maybe I can. I had just made Barbarella, you know, and I thought, maybe I can change too. And it was those two things in tandem, plus then what I heard from soldiers that, you know, made me, you have a choice in situations like that. You can turn away, which, you know, that's called being a scoundrel. If you know the truth and you turn away from it, but to know the truth and accept it, it means you now own the pain. And you then have to do something about it. So, looking at television that's not Fox, and looking at you know, reading and seeking information beyond the comfort zone is a good place to start. And very often what you find there will touch you in ways that stir the courage that we all have latent in us, you know, that just needs to be fired up.
Well, and absolutely, as you... Oh, yes, Elaine?
Well, I just wanted to thank her for saying that, because that's true. Once you're aware of something, you now own it. And if you turn your back on it, you know, it's not a very productive thing. It's hard to live with yourself. And I just wanted to comment on one other thing that you said about, and both of you were talking about. I really believe that we need a global women's movement where we go beyond race, we go beyond culture, we go beyond class, that we see each other as women, as the ones who bring forward the children, who bring forward the future, and that all women and all children must be protected. And yes, to recognize the pain of some of our sisters, some of our African-American sisters, our Japanese sisters, our Jewish sisters during the Holocaust. I mean, it goes on and on and on. But as women,
In a way, there is a global movement. There's a global movement that grew out of Eve Ensler's vagina monologues. It's called V-Day, Until the Violence Stops. and it's in hundreds and hundreds of countries. It starts in a country with a production of the vagina monologues. The money goes to local efforts to protect women and stop violence. And lives are changed as a result of this, and movements are formed. And there's like an army of women all over the vagina warriors all over the world that, you know, that are starting to link together. It's just that I've traveled in many countries with her and met these women, gypsies in Croatia and, you know, in Palestine and Israel. That's another thing. You know, you talk about a solution to the Mideast. Israeli women and Palestinian women talk to each other and are willing to listen to each other's narratives. That's one of the big problems, is we don't listen to each other's narratives and with an open heart and without interrupting. And that humanizing of the crisis can provide the true roadmap. And women have proposed roadmaps. We just have to now support them and let their voices be heard. But women all over the world are the ones that are leading the way to peace, because they listen to each other and they have compassion, and they it's not me and them, you know.
Well, thank you.
And I think thank you, Elaine. And
well, monologues, by the way. We had a play in Petaluma, and I just want to say just blessings to you, and thank you so much, Jane Fonda, for coming out, for having the courage. I saw you on C-SPAN, and I cried. I cried because I was joyful that you were there, but I also cried that we're in the same spot that we were back then.
Yeah.
But hopefully this is the last time, and thank you so much, and I'll say goodbye. Let the next caller come on.
Okay.
Thank you, Elaine. Yeah, and the syncretizing, I like the idea of taking from South Africa, the genius of South Africa transforming so much poison with the truth and reconciliation. And
and
then Scheherazade, the Arabian Nights. I go, why don't we have 1,001 nights of women of the Middle East leading storytelling? Because I think what you say is absolutely right, that when we think of what we call terrorism, so much it's people who couldn't, under such pressure of injustice that they no opportunity to tell their story. They're like, I will blow myself up. We go, no, come tell your story. But absolutely. So let's go to Humuk in Santa Rosa. Maybe not. Is there a Humuk, a caller in Santa Rosa?
Yes, we're here.
Okay.
Hello? Can you hear
Hello?
Me?
Hi.
We'd like you on a landline, not a speakerphone. Yeah?
Yeah, we're here.
Hi.
Okay.
Caroline.
Hey.
Humuk
yes.
here.
Humuk, hello.
How are you doing? This is, I just wanted to say to Jane how pleased I am that she's back in the peace movement. It's so great to hear her voice again. This is a question for Jane. I gave you a package of material at the Memphis conference about 9/11, and I wondered if you'd had a chance to view any of that material.
I have not had a chance. No, I'm sorry. I've been traveling.
I understand. You've been very busy. Anyway, when you get a chance, I'd like for you to take a look at that material and see if the peace movement and the 9/11 movement can find goals that are coincidental. I think it's very important that these two big movements that are presently marching separately march together, and I think you could be a great help in getting that to happen.
Thank you. I will. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's go to Andy from Alameda. Andy, come in.
Hello?
Hello, Andy. Yes, welcome.
Yes, hi. How are you?
Very good.
Great. Thanks so much for all of your work, Jane and Caroline. And I just wanted to say a little bit about adrenaline addiction and the culture of violence. And I did an experiment recently where I watched an entire football game with the sound turned off and ambient music in the background, and I noticed that all the images, commercials, and the scenes and so on were designed to hype up adrenaline and to generate adrenaline addiction and hook it into purchasing automobiles and militarism. And, you know, our entire mass media is kind of a conspiracy to get particularly young men wrapped up, pumped up, hyped up, and hooked on their own rage chemicals, and then they have nowhere to express it except through rage and violence. And there needs to be a way for the peace movement to channel this energy creatively and powerfully, such that, you know, it creates a possibility for something new to occur.
Rage.
Pillow fights might do it.
Pillow fights, rebuilding New Orleans, and pillow fights. That would be good. Yeah, because, absolutely. We live in the only kind of really recent minute of human history where there is no initiation of Mars, of either returning vets or young adolescent. You know, all other cultures said, oh, this is a volatile time, and we want to Venus the Mars, invite it, going, we need you to build Stonehenge. We need you to help do this thing. We need your unique contribution. And I think that's really part of the simplicity of it is, you know, we need everyone. To each young person, you know, you have something that nobody else has that we need, and we all need it now. That invitation to contribute uniqueness as opposed to get lost, hang out at the mall, play violent video games. But, yes, Andy.
Exactly.
Thank you, Andy.
Thanks very much.
You're welcome. Let's go to Lorenzo from Oakland. Come in, Lorenzo.
Hello. How are you, Caroline? Can you hear me?
Pretty good. Yes.
Oh, great. Listen, I just came back I just came back from Venezuela with Global Exchange. And we had the wonderful opportunity to visit two cooperatives all run by females. We visited a clinic. The brand new clinic that was built in a small town. We met four doctors from Cuba, all female, and three of the four doctors were Afro-Cubanas. We went to two schools, visited the teachers, majority female. So it's happening all over the world. This country is just clinging on to 500 years of colonization that has, I think, running out of steam. And, I just wanted to share
Excuse me, you said it was Venezuela?
Venezuela.
Yes.
Okay.
We went there for the election.
I just wanted to clarify where you were. Yeah.
Yeah. Went there
well,
for
that's
the
good news.
Yes, it is.
It's very exciting, Lorenzo. I always go out of my way to shop at Citgo. Not cause he's perfect, our leader of Venezuela, but that direction and absolutely what you report is crucial to our council. Yeah, Afro-Cubano doctors and that sense of kinship and real reverence for life. And also, thank you for pointing out that sometimes we just don't look outside large enough, that there is a women's global movement, and, you know, and part of it is, yes, Vagina Monologues, and part of it is there's a women's and a peace movement and people doing ingenious and wonderful things everywhere. So, good for you, Lorenzo. Thank you for being part of the team. Good. Let's see, Kira in Sebastopol, come in.
Hi. I just wanted to bring up a couple things, and thank you, Jane, and thank you, Caroline, for having this. This is fantastic. The first thing I wanted to bring up is there's a article, The Time Is Now, Women, Spirituality, and Leadership, and the website for it is www.gatherthewomen.org.
Okay.
And it's very much about a lot of what you folks are talking about right now about the women stepping forward, and we need to be more organized about what we really want to accomplish in the world.
That's great to know.
Yeah, the second is I'm not sure how familiar you are with Barbara Marx Hubbard's work. One of the things that really woke me up 3 or 4 years ago is a book called Conscious Evolution. And she talks about the time we're living in right now as a form of birth, that we're in that process of transforming into a new form of humanity.
May it be so.
Yes.
Yeah, we're certainly intending that. I think absolutely conscious evolution. What a good idea, and not a moment too soon. And we say let's discern, you know, ally ourselves with evolutionary intelligence, the liveliest possibilities available at any moment, and be willing. There are such opportunities, and that's great. Thank you very much, Kira.
Thanks,
Andrea from San Francisco.
Yes, I wanted to mention something that would make people feel hopeful about a global community, something that Jane has been a part of, too, and that is working with girls. I do it with a program that Jane has really been very supportive of, and I suggest that it's not very difficult to bring the next generation into support of a new vision and a new democracy, that reaching out to the girls in your life, I know that one of the great rewards that I have, as Jane mentioned, when you travel, you don't even have to travel in your body. You can travel through the internet long distance, and you can meet women and girls in different countries who need such, relatively speaking, little encouragement to take steps that greatly change the futures of each of them. And I think that when we talk about a global community, we really shouldn't leave girls out, and because they're pivotal. And I want, again, thank you, Jane, sorry we didn't connect in San Francisco, for being a part of Girls Speak Out and the campaign in Georgia as well.
Wonderful. Thank you very much, Andrea.
Well, there's a real reason why girls are important. Girls are the agents of change, and it's because patriarchy doesn't burrow down into the souls of girls until they reach adolescence, which means we have a good decade. Most of us have a good decade of life when we know who we sort of have a voice. We're not worried about being good girls or being too feminine or being this or that. That happens, you know, like at 13, 14. Whereas with boys, it socks them at about 5 years old. So for boys, they grow up with this notion of manhood, and you have to be a man, you know, you have to grow up to be a real man. So they don't, that's just, you know, as far as boys are concerned, it's life. That's all they know. So with, you know, you don't have to scratch too deep in the surface of girls to get them back to where they were before they lost their voices. It's harder with boys.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think one of the things we say is that there's thousands of stories in this fluctuating force field, and they can all be contradictory and all be true. And I would just say that part of what we want to also honor is that extension of, you know, the magical, the heroic, the mythological, which has been kidnapped, see, into the military and into the Dungeons and Dragons thing, but is very, very strong. I mean, I know a lot of really great, you know, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12-year-old boys who are, you know, magic with animals, and they want to, you know, do, and indigenous, again, the rising back up also of indigenous culture and that lives in us, that's very attractive and compelling. But we're on our way out, Jane. It's been all too short and wonderful. Do you have a well-wishing, can we feed you with a sense of well-wishing? We certainly welcome, we welcome you, and we go, you've never been more beautiful, and your gifts are so welcome.
Thank you. It's been a joy to know you, Caroline, and to be on your show, and just, I wish that we all can stay very strong and brave.
We will. Thank you so much. Thank you to our guest, Jane Fonda. Thank you to Erica Bridgman in Berkeley. Thank you very much to Margot Kelly in Washington, D.C. I'm Caroline Casey. For a copy of the show, you can go to visionaryactivism.com, and we will reconvene next week. Thank you all. Woof, 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 woof.